Hello and welcome back to Have You Seen It? I'm Maggie, and in this episode I have a political period piece drama from Peru to tell you about. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to a new season of Have You Seen It? It's been so long. I have planned to start back up so many times, and life just wasn't agreeing with it, but here we finally are, and I am so excited. And we are starting off this season with three new countries. But before I get into this week's show, I know this episode is coming out on a Friday, but the rest of my episodes will be coming out on Tuesdays, like I have been doing, I think, the last, like, two seasons or something, including this upcoming Tuesday. So in 5 days, there will be another episode. But the reason that this episode is coming out today on July 28th is for a very special reason. So first, let me say Feliz Día de la Independencia, Peru. Today is Peru's Independence Day, 202 years since they were liberated from Spain. And that's what this show is about. So it just seemed wrong to release this episode on any other day. So before I get into this episode again,
Feliz Día de la Independencia, Perú, y felicidades por los 202 años de independencia de España. Disfruta y celebra tus fiestas patrias.
Tomorrow is also a big day in Peru. They celebrate the 28th and the 29th, so congratulations, celebrate, love you. Let's get into this episode. So this week's episode, we are going to be talking about The Last Bastion, which, like I said in the very beginning, is a political period piece drama about the Peruvian Revolution. The Spanish title is El Último Bastión, and it came out in 2018. It was created by Eduardo Adrazen and is a National Institute of Radio and Television of Peru and TV Peru production that first aired on TV Peru Canal 7. It was part of the celebration of the bicentennial anniversary of Peruvian independence. The 200-year mark of Peruvian independence was actually in 2021, but I guess they decided to celebrate a little bit early with this one. If you look online, some websites say the show has two seasons, others have it only as one season. Netflix says it's only the one season. All 35 episodes are available on Netflix. This show takes place in and around Lima, Peru. One of the main places is the small town of La Magdalena, which I believe is now a historic district in the province of Lima. And the other place we see is Real Felipe Fortress, which is located in Callao, Peru, which is a city located on the coast. Peru's official name is the Republic of Peru, and it is a South American country located in the western part of the continent. It is bordered by Ecuador and Colombia to the north, Brazil to the east, Bolivia to the southeast, and Chile to the south. And to the west is the Pacific Ocean. There are no shows that take place within 300 miles of this show. Some fun facts about Peru are the Amazon River starts in Peru. Its starting point is up in the Peruvian Andes near Machu Picchu, and the Amazon rainforest covers about 60% of the country. And speaking of Machu Picchu, the lost city of the Incas was voted as one of the new seven wonders of the world in 2007, and it is one of the places I personally want to visit the most in the world. Like, I am so jealous of every person that gets to go. Lake Titicaca is located in Peru, and it's the highest navigable lake in the world. It sits at an elevation of 12,506 feet, and the Andean people refer to it as the Sacred Lake because of the legend of the god Viracocha appearing there and walking across the water. It is also the origin of the wonderful potato. Peruvians first found wild potatoes around Lake Titicaca over 10,000 years ago. There are still over 4,000 varieties of potatoes growing in the highlands of Peru. So that is my second favorite thing about the lake. The first is the name. I mean, it's probably the best named thing ever in the entire world. In 1928, archaeologist Julio Tello believed he had discovered a mass grave full of alien skulls. It was later determined that they weren't actually alien skulls, but rather human skulls that were elongated for aesthetic purposes and as a sign of nobility that started at birth. So they would press a newborn baby's head between two wooden boards, which would cause the skull to form in the long skull shape. This story was combined with the legend of the crystal skull for the fourth and better to be forgotten Indiana Jones movie, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. The crystal skulls were allegedly artifacts from pre-Columbian Mesoamerica. They are made out of clear or milky white quartz in the shape of a human skull, but science was able to prove that the quote-unquote finders of these artifacts were lying about the skulls. Scientists determined that these fake skulls were actually made in the 19th century in the town of Idar-Oberstein in Germany. The pre-Columbian era ended in the late 15th century, by the way, with the arrival of Christopher Columbus, hence the term pre-Columbian. So definitely not the 19th century, and I know I'm American, and we aren't known for, you know, knowing world geography, but last time I checked, Germany was located in Europe and not South America. So if you have one of these crystal skulls, you have a 19th century Germanic artifact, which I guess is still sort of cool, except for the fact that they were created to exploit the newfound interest in aging cultures. Also, there are no authentic beliefs or mythologies of crystal skulls that have magical powers in any indigenous cultures in all of the Americas. So if you believe there is, or someone tries to tell you there is, there isn't. It was a European lie to try to make money. So anyways, the last fun fact I have for you is that over 70% of the world's alpacas live in Peru. There are an estimated 10 million alpacas around the world, and about 7.5 million of them are in Peru, which I know is closer to 75%, but two websites have two different numbers, so I took a little bit from both. They speak Spanish in this show, and there are no audio alternatives, and subtitles are only available in English and closed caption Spanish. This show is rated TVMA. The disclaimers that Netflix has for the show are smoking in language. I'm gonna add that there is both sexual violence and regular violence in the show as well. We see some battle scenes as well as some of the slaves being whipped, and we see a woman getting raped, so be aware of those things if they are triggers for you. It's been like a year since I've said this, so let's see if I can get through it without messing up. The links to all the websites where I got the information for this show, the fun facts, or any other information that I did not use my memory for are going to be linked in the description of this episode as well as in the caption for the post that I made for the show on Instagram. Okay, so for the cast of this show, there are a lot of people, but I'm going to stick to the people that the main story is centered around. The first is Paco Robles, who is played by Giovanni Arce, a lawyer who wants to fight for the liberation of Peru. His brother Lorenzo, who is played by Rodrigo Palacios, is a captain fighting for the Spanish army, which already is a hot start. One brother is a patriot and the other is a royalist. Their younger sister Rosa Maria is played by Priscilla Espinosa. She gets along with both of her brothers, and at the beginning you don't really know where she stands in the fight for freedom. I will say the two brothers do get along at the beginning, despite the fact that their allegiances are on opposite sides of the war, but there's some tension, you know. Of course there would be. Their parents are Francisco and Josefa Robles, played by Sergio Galliani and Lele Goizeta. They are royalists, so rich. Next is Lorenzo's wife Teresa. She is played by Steffi Jacobs. Her parents are Herman and Isabel, and they are played by Fernando Bakovic and Monica Madueño. They are Spanish, so they are obviously royalist, and they own a general store in Lima. The next group is the comedy troupe that Paco befriends, and they are made up of Antonia Mazombe, who's played by Mara Naijar, Catalina, who's played by Mayela Yokia and is cousins with Marcelino, who is also part of the comedy troupe and is in a relationship with Antonia at the beginning, and he is played by Claret Kea. And the last member of the troupe is Amelia, who is Catalina's grandmother and Marcelino's aunt, and she is played by Grapa Paula. The next group of people are the people that work on the Robles' land. First is Tadea. She is played by Anahí Padilla, and she is a slave that works primarily in the kitchen. Blas is played by Jason Perkovich Palma, and he is a slave that does manual labor. He and Tadea are together, but have very different opinions when it comes to the Robles. Next is Vicente. He is played by Manuel Calderón. He is head field worker. He and his family aren't slaves, but they aren't treated much better. Vicente's wife's family all work on the land as well. Micaela, his wife, is played by Jackie Vasquez. Her mother, Justina, is played by Flor Castillo. And her son, Miguel, is played by Daniel Cano. I don't know about Vicente, but I know that Micaela, Justina, and Miguel are indigenous. Vicente is not Miguel's birth father, and the two of them do not get along. The only other member of their family that I will mention is Paula, who is played by Yimeli Caparo. She is Miguel's sister. Her father is Vicente. The last group of people I will mention are the other patriots that we see fight alongside Paco, and they are Paco's friend Charles, who is played by Juan Carlos Pastor Izierreta. He is a mortician, I believe. Rosa Campuzano, who's played by Connie Chaparro, and she is a high society woman who lends her home to meetings and other gatherings for the patriots. A name some of you may be familiar with is José de San Martín. He is credited with liberating Argentina, Chile, and Peru, and he is played by Omar García Serra. His right-hand man, Bernardo de Monteagudo, is played by Renato Medina Vassallo. And the very last person, who I will begrudgingly mention, is Adolfo Soto Velázquez, and he is played by Diego Lombardi. He is a higher status individual and a total piece of shit. And I hate him. I mean, what are you, you're gonna name a character, but Adolf, can't really name him a likable one, can you? Like I said, there are a lot of people to remember, but it doesn't feel like that when watching the show. There were some people that I didn't even mention that we see quite a bit of. There were also some people that I didn't mention because I didn't want to ruin the surprise, but that's only like one or two people. But yeah, so that's the cast of The Last Bastion. Okay, so now let's go over the first several minutes of the very first episode. If you don't know, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. I am a firm believer, and like this is for me how I watch shows, if the show does not capture my attention in any way in the first 15 minutes, I know that I'm not gonna like the show overall. So that first 15-20 minutes of an episode is super important to me, which is why I cover them here. If you don't like it, let me know. I'll maybe try something different, but so far I've gotten zero feedback. So I'm gonna do what I like until I hear otherwise. But before I get into the first 15 minutes, the description that Netflix has for this show is, the Robles family, born and raised in the Americas, experiences the highs and lows of the revolutionary drive to Peru's independence. So the show opens up with us seeing Paco Robles on Saturday, July 28th, 1821, and he is walking through a square in Lima, Peru, as it is getting prepared for a political event. We then see José de San Martín and Bernardo de Monteagudo talking about what is taking so long for them to be able to go out and like talk to the crowd. And San Martín says it was supposed to start at 10, and we know from Paco's watch that we saw right before this that it's about 10:10, so they're about 10 minutes late. Monteagudo says the stage isn't ready yet, and San Martín eventually says that if the stage collapses, they'll take it as an omen and heads out to declare independence in Lima. We see them make their way to the stage, and then we see a shot of Paco standing in the crowd, and this is the first time we're seeing Antonia and Catalina and Charles. They are waiting for San Martín to come out and give his speech, and you can tell like the excitement of all of the people that are there. We see some other characters as well in the crowd, and if I'm honest, I didn't see them the first time through. It wasn't until I was doing this podcast that I noticed them. But before San Martín can give his speech, it goes to the intro, and when it comes back from the intro, it is now 1817, so 4 years earlier. We see Catalina, Antonia, Emilia, and Marcelino traveling towards Lima. Again, remember they are a comedy troupe, so they are going there to find work. Catalina and Emilia are pulling the wagon that has most of their belongings on it, and Antonia and Marcelino are behind them with a donkey. I'm gonna guess that the donkey was pulling the wagon and the harness broke, but at some point Catalina pulls out her spyglass and uses it to look ahead, and her and Marcelino have a little back and forth about how she's looking for a boyfriend, and she says that she'll never get married. So Marcelino's like, oh, you're looking for a boyfriend? She's like, I'm never gonna get married. And Emilia takes the spyglass and says something about the man she's looking for may be closer than she thinks, and then looks through the spyglass in a different direction and spots the town of La Magdalena. They decide to hang around there for a little bit and put on shows, and that's what we see next, along with some shots of some kids running through some of the shops that are there. It's kind of a cool shot to kind of show the little town that is Magdalena. They don't have a large crowd for this show watching, but there are a handful of people there. And the show that they're putting on is about the King of Spain and the movement towards freedom throughout South America. They mention how Chile has recently won their independence and soon Peru will too. Only one adult and some kids applaud as it ends, but no one is giving any money because they don't really have any to give. Amelia takes a piece of bread from like the one adult that was actually into the performance and she like storms off and I'm like, I don't really blame you. Every other adult was like, this is stupid, and she was like front row like clapping, and she's the one that gets her food stolen from her. We then see a shot of Lorenzo Robles arriving home after fighting in the Battle of Chacabuco, which the comedian troupe mentioned during their show. His mother and sister run out to greet him, and Blas takes his horse. His mother says he's returning home a hero, and he says more like a defeated man. And she says that he is a man alive after carrying out his duty. And you can tell he does not share her feelings at all with this. The three of them head into the house, and it goes to Mr. Robles, who's in the field with Vicente, Miguel, and Miguel's mother, Miquelea. They are talking about how little water the lands need when farming and if Mr. Robles thinks they should plant black grapes there. During their conversation, you get the vibe that he isn't the nicest guy, but, and I'm talking about Mr. Robles, but Blas comes running up and tells him that Lorenzo has come home, and Mr. Robles tells him to get everyone a glass of liquor so they can celebrate the return of his firstborn son. He then tells Vicente to have Miguel start plowing the field and that they will talk about increasing rent for tenants later. So, not everyone that works on the Robles land is a slave. They do have slaves, like I mentioned before, but Miguel and his family aren't technically slaves, and if my ability to read context clues is accurate, the land that the Robles family owns, which is actually Josefa's family's lands, not Francisco's, even though he fucking acts like it is, originally belonged to Miguel's grandmother, Justina's people. So when Francisco walks away, Mr. Robles, sorry, I keep changing his name there. When he walks away, Miquelea tells Vicente not to tell her mother about Mr. Robles' comments about forgetting old stories, and if they continue to tell them and act on them, then the Indians will claim the land from the mountains to the seas. You know, not a nice guy. He's not a nice guy. Vicente says that her mom will be upset anyways when she finds out that the Robleses are raising the rent. Miguel tells him that it doesn't matter if she hears the comments or not. She already hates the Robles family, so if you wanted to know the dynamic between how the people that work on the land feel about the Robles, well, they at least don't like Mr. Robles. They don't really like Josefa either, but yeah. Anyways, we then see the comedian troupe again, as well as a conversation between Lorenzo and both of his parents, and Rosa Maria about his time at war and his upcoming wedding, but I'm gonna skip to when we meet Paco. Lorenzo doesn't know that his brother is on the side of the Patriots, and when he asks his parents where his little brother is, and if they knew when he was coming home, because he wanted to give him a hug, they didn't say anything, and then it cuts to Paco walking through what looks like it could be a university. I'm not quite sure, I don't think they ever clarify, but he runs into his friend Charles, and he tells him about how his brother should be home already, and how it is a happy day for their family. Charles mentions how over 500 royalists died in the battle, and that Lorenzo is probably demoralized, and Paco agrees, and says that his brother should leave the army and join the cause, because defeats are the only thing the monarchy can hope for in the future, and Charles says that the liberating armies are moving toward Lima to take it, but that it would take some time before they get there. But before Paco leaves, Charles tells him, quote, "Before criticizing your military brother, remember that he was picking up the corpses of his fellow soldiers in that battle in Chile where he was defeated, although he has gone against freedom." It's sort of like, hey, don't forget he's your brother first, and he just watched a lot of people he knows and was close to die in front of him, which is, you know, I think a pretty good way to describe the brothers' relationships. They do not agree on the revolution, and they do fight for different sides, and while they do butt heads over it at times, they try to keep their family ties ahead of everything else. I didn't get into Rosa Maria's storyline here at all, because you don't really get to know it until later in the show. She is the youngest and has reached the age where her parents are looking for a husband, so we see her go through that. Antonia's storyline is mentioned here and there in the first few episodes. It takes a couple of episodes for them to get into it more. It is one of the better ones, I will say. And we do see scenes of San Martin and his men making their way towards Lima throughout the first, like, 10 episodes or so. But for the most part, at the very beginning of the show, it focuses more on Paco and the people in Lima and La Magdalena and kind of how everything is affecting their lives really before the fight for freedom reaches their front door. That's where I will leave this part of the episode. I know it wasn't super long. I think that was about 13 minutes of the first episode, which, like I said at the beginning, is the sweet zone of what I like to talk about when doing this part of the episode. There are a lot of secondary storylines with each of the characters that I mentioned when going over the cast. Some of them are happy and uplifting and beautiful, and they make you cry. And some of them are sad. And I Snapchatted my friends at the end of this show. I'll get to that in a minute. But there are some storylines that you think are going to be more prominent at times, and they fall into the background a bit, and some characters that you think will be more prominent that aren't. But the show is about the fight for the independence of Peru from Spain, like I said earlier, and I like that we see that fight through a bunch of different people's perspectives. So I did enjoy that. Which leads me to my likes and dislikes. So, this show overall, not my favorite. I really don't think this show got good until about the last 5 episodes, maybe the last 8 episodes. It started off a little slow, in my opinion. It gets a little bit better in the middle, and I don't know if it's because, like, the drama picks up a bit, or more seems to happen, or, you know, because you finally get to know the characters, or you get more invested in their different stories, but this is definitely a show that builds, and my friends all received Snapchats of me when I finished this show, sobbing, absolutely sobbing, and talking about how this show was shit for the first 22 episodes. I was just probably a little bit harsh. I think my emotions were getting the best of me, but I was a mess. And they were like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not okay. Fuck this show and fuck these people. This show sucked, bro. It sucked." And I was sobbing. Oh my God, the end of this show fucked me up. I will tell you that right now. So if that interests you, go for it. But you need to put the time in, and you need to put the effort in, and you need to watch all 35 fucking episodes. Because I did, and you do too. No, it was it was not my favorite show, but I struggled to get through most of these episodes in one sitting. And then I don't know what, like, episode 28 or something like that, all of a sudden I just watched it, binged it all at home. Usually I watch these shows at work. You didn't hear that. If I know you from work, you did not hear that. But, like, I don't usually watch these shows at home. But, like, this show, I got home and I just, like, binged it and finished it. Because I was, like, and I was sobbing. I was crying at work watching it. It was crazy. Again, this show was a show that builds. And I fucking hated it. But I did it. But, like, didn't hate it at the... I don't know. Anyways, I don't think the acting was horrible in this show. Completely. There are times where it is not good. It's either overacted or just poorly acted. But that being said, some of the actors do a really good job playing asshole characters. Francisco. Because I really didn't like some of the characters because of how they act in the show. Adolfo. Their air of arrogance, the way they talk to people, the way they walk, just, oh, everything. There is one character that I don't like because of how bad of an acting job the actor does. I'm not going to say which one, but every time he talks or does anything, I'm like, shut up. Who cares? Get the fuck over it. And he's like crying the fact that, like, his store has, like, gotten broken into or something, and, like, his whole life work is just, like, down the drain. And I'm like, sorry, this is not a good job. Other than that one guy's acting job, and the fact that it is a very slow building show, I don't really have anything particularly negative to say about it. Again, I think my reaction in the Snapchats to my friends about... actually, let me see. I might have saved him. Let me see if I can find the audio to play it for you so you guys can hear this. Hold on. Stand by. Okay, I found it, and I'm just gonna play this for you. I might add this video on Instagram, but I'm just gonna play this for you. It's 18 seconds.
Watching this fucking show, and it's been shit for 27 episodes, and the last 6 episodes are killing me. And fuck this show, because it was awful. It was horrible for the first 27 fucking episodes.
So that's what I sent my friends. They had no idea what show I was talking about. And then when I finished the show, I had to recollect myself. So this is a little bit longer of a clip, but this is me after, and I do think I start crying again. Okay, here we go.
So I finished the show. I had 2 episodes left after that last snap, and I cried more. But I stand by everything I said in that Snapchat. The first 20 episodes of the show was fucking dog shit. The storyline was slow. The characters were one-dimensional. The acting was fucking horrible. It was a show about the Peruvian Revolution. And like, I know some things about the Peruvian Revolution, and I know that they made it for Peruvians, but like, why would you put that show out to celebrate yours? It's fucking sad. It ends fucking sad. It's a sad fucking ending to a show, and I knew people were gonna die. I knew they were gonna die. I just didn't think they were gonna die like that. I just didn't think they were gonna die like that, and it was very fucking sad. It was very fucking sad. And I'm glad I never have to fucking watch it again.
Oh gosh, if you wanted to know what type of Snapchat my friends got when I watched some of these shows, I do not stand by my opinion that the show was absolute dog shit for the first 20 something episodes. Again, I was very emotional in that moment. I do apologize to all of the actors. There were some spoilers there, though it does take place in the 1800s, so, you know, of course people are gonna die. But the ending of it is very sad. Those may be my two favorite Snapchats I've ever sent. And I did not send them to be funny. I sent them because I was in emotional turmoil and I needed an outlet. And I do actually have a Snapchat for this podcast. I don't ever post to it, but if you guys want me to post like reactions like that, like live reactions, I guess, I don't know, let me know and I will. But yes, that was my live reaction to the ending of this show. Again, I know I doubled down in that second clip about me thinking the show was dog shit. I actually didn't think the show was dog shit. I enjoyed the show. It's slow, but overall, looking back at it, it's been a while since I actually finished the show. Looking back at it, I did enjoy the show. It's just in the moment, it was a lot. But there were some scenes that were hard to watch. Like, for example, Josefa Robles tells Rosa Maria to basically... This is a trigger warning, by the way. Let me say that before. Josefa tells her daughter, her young, late teen daughter, to just take whatever her new husband does to her because eventually he'll lose interest. And, of course, he rapes her on their wedding night. And I can't, hearing her say that to her daughter, I know it's the time, I get it, but like, I cannot imagine looking at my daughter and saying, I can't imagine saying that to anybody, never mind my own child. And like, again, I get it. Some people are going to be like, oh, well, that was the time. There are still women who give their daughters that advice today because they've been conditioned that that's the role of a woman in a relationship, and it makes my stomach turn just thinking about looking at a child that you birthed, that you raised, that your one obligation to them is to keep them safe, alive and safe, and you tell them to take whatever their husband is going to do to them because eventually he'll lose interest. Or you could just not marry her off to a piece of fucking shit. Maybe that's an option, Josefa. Josefa does grow a lot in the show. I will add that. And she does come to regret that. That's a spoiler. I will let you know that. She does come to regret that. But anyways, another hard scene is when a slave is getting whipped. It happens a couple of times in the show, and it's hard every single time. Part of me is like, why would you include that? And then the other part of me is like, no, that needs to be included. Well, needs to is kind of a harsh term, but you can't gloss over that part of a history. We do that here in the United States all the time. We don't like to own up to the harsh realities of what we did to black people, to minorities, what we do to black people and minorities. We'd like to just pretend that it doesn't happen when it does. But man, these scenes are really, really hard to watch. And if you have a heart and you're a good person, these scenes are hard to watch. Those same people that are whipping the slave in the scene that is very hard to watch are like shocked when that slave comes back and treats them how they treated him before he escaped and joined Saint Martin's army. And it's like, this is called karma, you stupid piece of shit. I admittedly knew next to nothing about Peru's fight for independence. And based on that that video that I showed you, or I played for you, I don't know how much I really learned about it more than like the dates. But again, that show's not made for American from the United States of America. It's made for Peruvians to celebrate their bicentennial. So happy 202 years of independence, Peru. But like I said, I didn't know much about the fight for independence in Peru, so I don't know how accurate this show was presenting it, but I didn't find anything online from any group saying it was bad or inaccurate, and it seems, from an outsider's point of view, that they did a good job of showing all of the groups that helped fight for Peru's independence and how it affected them. They never really got, like, super deep. In that video, I said that they were very one-dimensional. They don't go super, super deep on a lot of the characters in regards to the fight for independence, but I thought they did a good job of showing how many people were actually affected by it, whereas in like the United States we really only focus on like white people. But I really did enjoy learning about the beginning days of Peru. Again, I never would have known any of these dates if it wasn't for the show, so there's that. If you like history, then you will probably enjoy the show. If you guys do watch the show, let me know if you liked it or not. If you know anything about Peruvian independence, let me know how accurate this show is, because again, I couldn't find anything online, and that's something that I'm always interested in, especially if it's like government funded. Like, how honest are you going to be with us right now? So if you know that, let me know that as well. So for my other things section, if you are new to the podcast, I talk about things that either stand out or things that I notice are similar to how we do things in the United States that like I never would have guessed was similar. As usual, period pieces, it's hard to narrow down exactly what stood out because everything stands out, but there were three things that I think stood out, not because of the time in which the show took place, but just because they're different. And they are, one, I didn't know that Don and Donna are used with people's first names, whereas Señor and Señora are used with last names. I feel like I should have known that, but I was like, oh, I didn't know that when I like looked it up, or when I was like, whenever they say it in the show or something. So I knew that Señor and Señora were used with last names, like Mr. and Mrs., but I didn't know about Don and Donna. I don't know how I thought they were used, but I know I didn't know that they were exclusively used with first names. I read online that Don and Donna are used as a mark of respect, and in Spain, they are very formal, so it's like calling people Lord and Lady, but I don't believe it's a formal thing today in Latin America. In the United States, we obviously don't use Lord or Lady, so we don't have anything similar to that. We just say Mr. and Mrs. The next thing is that the bride and groom see each other before the service. The couple we see get married is Christian, and I don't know what denomination it is, but I'm gonna guess Catholic, and I thought you weren't supposed to do that because it's bad luck. So I don't know if you know exactly like when that became like a thing to not see like the person you're marrying before, because I know for like arranged marriages it was a thing, because like that was also like the reason why you had the veil, was so that you couldn't see the face of like the ugly bride before. But I don't know if that plays into it or if it's like different. I don't really know. Or if like you knew the person, you could see them. I don't know, but I could look it up, but I don't want to. So if you know, let me know. The last thing that I'll mention is a pututu, which is described in the show as, quote, a type of horn used in the mountains. And online it says it is an Andean trumpet that is typically made from the shell of an adult Eastern Pacific giant conch, but it can also be used from the horn of a cow. Pututu is the Quechua word meaning snail. I feel like a lot of us have seen them before, but I didn't know that that's what they were called in Peru, and now I do. And I could have used this in words and phrases section, but I didn't feel like it. I don't know why, but I didn't. If you guys watch this show and anything stands out to you, let me know. Which, that last one is a pretty good segue into my next section, which is words and phrases. So again, if you're new, words and phrases are the words and phrases that I pick up while watching these shows. I speak Spanish very, very little, very, very limited Spanish, but I know a lot more Spanish than I do most other languages, so it's kind of hard when watching Spanish-speaking shows to like pick up new words and phrases. Most of them are slang terms or like colloquialisms and stuff like that. But for this show, I was able to grab two words. They are títeres, spelled T-I-T-E-R-E-S, and the I has an acute accent over it, which is the one that goes from down to up, left to right. And in the show, it translates it as puppets. Títere is puppet, and then like títeres is like puppeteers or something like that, I think, if you Google it. But in the show, they translate them as puppets because that's what they use, títeres. The other word is chanza, and it is spelled C-H-A-N-Z-A, and it means joke. So the word I know and use for joke is broma, which is, I believe, the like standard universal word for it, meaning no matter what Spanish-speaking country you're in, they'll know what you mean. Where chanza, I think, is more based in like the Peru, Chile area of Latin America. I could be wrong, but that's what I found online. But again, they are títeres and chanza. If you guys pick up words and phrases while watching the show, then let me know. For familiar faces, I wasn't able to recognize any of the actors. There is an actor in this show that I see in another show, but I didn't watch that show until after the show, so he doesn't count. So you'll have to wait for that episode, probably in about 10 years, to figure out which one that is. If you guys do recognize any of the actors in this show, then let me know who they are and where you know them from, and if the show or movie is available to stream so that I can check it out. I watch shows that are not just on Netflix. I know that it seems like it, but Netflix does have the largest array of international shows, which I wish more streaming platforms had more shows so there was more options, but right now I seem to be handcuffed to Netflix. But that's all I have for you guys for this show. It is a limited series, so there won't be a second season, but I think it's a really cool way of showing the Peruvian Revolution without it being a documentary. I can see Spanish classes using this show as like a teaching lesson. Like, I don't know, for those that took Spanish, you know, like there's sometimes like you're learning about a specific country or something like that, and I feel like this show would be a good option for that. If you guys give the show a chance, then let me know what you thought about it, what you liked or didn't like. As always, you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at @officialHYSI. You can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/officialHYSI. And if you have show suggestions or feedback, you can email me at haveyouseenit1@gmail.com. I hope you all have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Stay safe and healthy, and I will see you Tuesday, where I will be talking about the mystery thriller show Scarlet Hill from Vietnam. Have you seen it? Because I have.